Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Driving Mall Show here, coming to you at 8 p.m. every single Tuesday. Hello to all those of you lot watching live on YouTube, YouTube, Facebook and Twitter. And also, obviously, those who watch the recordings as well. Thank you. Great to have you all here. Love your comments and interacting with you guys. And that's what we're going to be doing today is we're going to be having a look at some Q&As, some questions that have been asked by the audience across Facebook, Twitter and YouTube. So let us know your thoughts. If you are watching live, you can put some questions in. If you're watching the recording, put some questions in as well. We'll get round to them next week. And don't forget also, you can listen to the recording on the podcast. Just search for New Zealand Sport Radio on your favourite podcatcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all of those wonderful places. So before we get into the topics, I'll bring in my guest. It's Boa. How are you doing, sir?
Very well. My highlight of the week, all you fans out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're on either UBook or FaceTube, you got it.
You're in the right place.
More. Always a pleasure. So, yeah, guys, thanks for tuning in. And, you know, we're starting to build a bit of a following. And, you know, you guys make the show and it's really cool to be on. And, Paul, thank you for having me.
They don't make the show. I do. It's all about me. How dare you? Jeez, they make the show. You see, this whole FaceTube and UBook and FaceTube, these are the new places that Donald Trump have gone. And now he's been banned off the main ones. These are we've hit the alternative social media platforms. And that's where it's all at nowadays.
Good evening to Simon Hughes, one of our
evening, Simon,
regulars on the show.
Yep, two regular.
And Jack Davy as well.
Viewers, great to have you guys here. So yeah, some of the questions that have come in from South Africa, we've been asked about who's going to make the Currie Cup final. We've been asked about down the mini World Cup that the Australia Rugby has been suggesting that takes place in July this year. Boa brought up a lovely topic around the Lions and Plan Z. It sounds like World War Z or something. I don't know. One of those funny zombie movies that we're going to have going on. So, yes, it's going to be a zombie apocalypse Lions tour, apparently. But, hey, we'll get on to that one later. The Crusaders have announced their replacement coach as well, so we'll get on to that. And a few Super Rugby questions asking us what we think our first 15s are for each of the sides. What should there be mid-season transfers and where will Super Rugby expand to next, or where should it expand to? Those are all the ones that have come through on the old socials. And also, by the way, you can also email me. That's a really old-fashioned way of doing it, isn't it? paul@nzsportradio.com is how you can email me as well. So we'll get through as many of those as we can. Ones we don't get through this week, hey, there's always next week. Let's be honest, we're a little ways off Super Rugby. But I do know that it's coming up because I got sent today my online form to apply for media access. So, yes, it's starting to hot up. It's starting to become real. It's nearly here, isn't it, Boa?
It is. And, Paul, good to see that you've been invited to cover the Super Rugby. You're moving into the...
slow down. I've been invited to apply. That doesn't mean I'm going to get... doesn't mean I'm actually going to actually get it. So let's just... One step at a time.
I'm sure you will, mate. I'm sure you will. And, knocking on the right doors, and it's good to see that, you know, New Zealand Sport Radio moving in with the right what's the word I need to use? The right elements of sport.
Maybe. I'm not sure that the Stuff and the Herald are great people to be associated with or good company, but there you go. We'll just...
Well, it's all relative. It is all subjective. Love them or hate them. But yeah, no, very exciting times. And yeah, it's I've been keeping an eye on what some of the Super Rugby squads are doing. And I can assure you that these guys are really putting in the hard yards. Some real emphasis on strength and conditioning. And yeah, it's going to be a very exciting season. That's for sure.
It is. And folks, even I went to preseason training last week. And I got down to the Waihee Rugby Club for that. I think it was the first run out of the year. Don't worry, folks, I'm not actually going to be playing. This body would get broken very quickly and you would suddenly lose New Zealand Sports Radio as I spent the next 6 months in hospital. Yes, I will be, I've been getting down to pre-season to get a bit of family fitness. Bella, have you been involved in pre-season with Manukau Rovers?
Yeah, look, for last couple of seasons, we've really been focusing on the conditioning aspect of it because, you know, being a club in South Auckland, especially players who are by and large amateurs involved at the grassroots level or community sport, you know, they tend to kind of taper off the fitness, especially just before Christmas, just after Christmas, and they come back. You know what they say, you know, the square of the meal, the rounder you get. So they come in carrying a few pounds extra. But I have to say, over the last couple of years, one thing I have seen, even at amateur rugby level, most of the players involved, they take their training very, very seriously. And I see them do a lot of training on their own, especially with, you know, having strength and conditioning coaches. They prescribe schedules and programs, and then they stick to it. And of course, one way to know whether you've done the work is the testing regime as you come back, the good old Bronco. And I have to say, you know, some of these kids, they really put in the yards and we very quickly find out who's done the work and who hasn't. So, off-season is always a bit of a drag. You hear a bit of oohs and ahs, lots of sore bodies. But from a coaching point of view, you really get to know the guys who actually do put in the work. And it's testing times, Paul.
Yeah, it is. I remember having a hockey coach in Hong Kong, and he said that he was going through all the age grades and stuff, and did fine until he got to provincial level, and they put a heart rate monitor on him, and they went, "You're lazy, aren't you?" And he's like, "Well, I could run a bit harder." And that was where he got dropped at that point, where they could actually monitor kind of how much running he was really doing. So yes, all fun.
And Paul, keep in mind, especially for the club premier grade players, this season there's going to be a lot of competition because obviously what's happening in Japan, there's a bit of uncertainty. So you will actually see a lot of players come down from Japan, and especially in the Auckland and the counties, Manukau, and also probably in the Wellington region, you will see a lot of players who have been contracted to these Japanese clubs come down wanting some game time. So the reality is, if you're a amateur player, you really, really have to be on your game because you're competing for spots, valuable spots, against now hardened professionals who play rugby for a living who are looking for game time. So going to be interesting season 2021.
Yeah, there's a few comments in here. Nocturnal Wright says that Sport Radio should take a road trip to Christchurch and Dunedin for Super Rugby. I would love to. A road trip would get wet, though, wouldn't it? And that requires flights. Flights, unfortunately, seem to require money rather than flapping. So if you would like to give me some funds so potentially I could get down there, then have a look at patreon.com/NZSportRadio and become a supporter of New Zealand Sport Radio. And perhaps we'll be able to get down to Christchurch and Dunedin. So, Jack, yes, I agree. Fantastic idea. I would love to get down there. It's not going to happen. Those of you that are joining us, thank you so much for joining us live. Thank you so much, because I do know over in Australia, there is a cracking test match. I was watching it until we came on air. So Arun hopefully will keep us up to date in the live chat with how that one's going. India, as you said, just needing 53 runs with 5 wickets left five wickets left off nine overs. So yes, really going down to the wire there, cracking test match being going on. And you can listen to Arun and myself talk about it last night on the Swinging from the Hip. And if you're into your cricket, go check out that show as well. Talking about Super Rugby, and yeah, Thomas makes the point there that the Force have recruited like crazy. Yes, they have done. Boa, as you'll be aware, recruiting a team like recruiting a squad is one thing; getting them to play on the pitch as a team is another, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with your crucial positions and combinations, especially your halves, your back three, your throwing and jumping partnerships. And of course, you know, the general whole culture in your team. So it's not just a case of going and recruiting the best possible bunch of players you can. All it then becomes is it's kind of like General Hannibal's army of mercenaries who fought in the Carthaginian Wars. Super Rugby or any competition for that matter, if you go back and analyze the last 10, 15, 20 years in those blocks of 5 years, but you see some very common patterns, and some of those patterns are the same bunch of players in some of the key positions are retained, and also their succession planning, i.e. their bench strength, and also the wider development teams and the academy teams have some really quality players, and they don't tend to recruit laterally too much. Case in point being the Crusaders. So, whilst at face value it might look like the Force or the Western Perth-based Force are recruiting help, you know, which is wonderful for them because they've obviously got the financial backing of the mining magnate Twiggy right behind them. You know, throwing money and recruiting right, left and center might not necessarily be the be-all and end-all answer of high performance. It's more a case of understanding playing patterns, having the right halves combinations, especially the halves combinations, and also having a consistent bunch of players who understand the culture and understand the playing patterns, who can turn up just at a drop of a hat and do their jam.
Yeah, and also Wright says, who are some of the big names? Thomas Cabelli, Rob Kearney, as Jack puts in the live chat there, also Tavita Kirindrani, has moved over there. They already had a good win. So, yes, a Brumbies centre partnership potentially happening there. So, yeah, they have got some good names. But also, the players like Rob Kearney, let's be honest, towards the end of his career, so an older player. Kirindrani, is he still the same player that he was? I think he's got some case to make to try and get himself back into that Wallabies team. So there is experience and some good names there, perhaps past their peak for a couple of them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, recruiting guys like Rob Kearney, I mean, you know, my view, well past their prime. To me, it's just a payday gig, you know, they just turn up and do their jam. And if you're serious about winning a title, you really need players who have true X factor. And this is where you go slightly lateral and recruit the real game breakers. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily you have to go and recruit or sign up a big name from either hemisphere. You really need to start looking a little wider and pick players based on the rest of the squad who can play to a certain style and play to those attacking patterns you have. So, case in point being someone like Caleb Clark, who, at a very young age brought straight into the Blues, then straight into the All Blacks fold. That's the sort of game breaker you need. So, with all due respect for Rob Kearney, all his experience, all those years, to me, it looks like a big payday retirement gig eventually leading up to retirement. So, we wish him.
Some of the things he does bring in, people like him, people like Jeremy Thrush, the ex All Black, is that they bring a certain amount of professionalism to the squad, so the young players can know how to behave. But you'd think also when they're bringing in players like Thomas Cabelli, Thomas Lozana, we've also got Santiago Medrano, and Domingo Miotti, four ex-Jaguares players coming into the side. I'm not sure they really need that, the experience of someone like Rob Carney, but hey, look, we're talking about a British and Irish Lions player. He is class, but yeah, on the downhill, as you say. Simon Hughes does mention Toulon. Sure, Toulon was very good, and then they went and got themselves a player called Johnny Wilkinson. When you've got players like I've gone blank, the South African lock, who was a not both of the other one there, but when you got someone like players like that who are going, oh, we were scared not to train with Johnny Wilkinson around because his levels were so high. Yeah, it took someone like him to bring the right culture in to Toulon, and they went from being a collection of Galacticos to being a team that went and won things. And you got to remember, a lot of those players also went back to South Africa and carried on playing international rugby. The Argentinians aside, you can't really see many of the other ones going back and playing much more international rugby, to be honest. Hopefully the force will be more. It's great they're in a permanent competition now. It's great that they actually get some play to exist, and hopefully they can grow from this. But yeah, don't expect too much from them this year. My comment.
Yeah, look, it's a very interesting strategy and interesting formula they use. It's Super Rugby is very competitive, very high level of competition, and you need some special players, and of course you need a great culture, and you need some very good playing patterns which the players know inside out to win, let alone be competitive. So all the best to the force. May the force be with them. But for me, I think they're gonna struggle.
Yeah. Noctara, it'll be interesting to see what they've brought in some good players, say in the forwards. So we'll see how their pack compares to others. The problem with playing a high tempo game is that you have to know exactly what everyone's doing. Otherwise, balls suddenly start hitting grass, etc. So it's all good and well. So we'll just play a high tempo game, but then you have to be even more in sync with each other than if you're playing a slower tempo game. So it's all good and well just saying, hey, let's try and run the opposition off their feet. It's not that easy. Let's move over to South Africa, though. And have you been following the Currie Cup at all, Boa? Are you able to? Because we had a question from Twitter on this one coming from, and I'm just bringing up Twitter now. I should have actually had all these lined up, obviously. From Demma Lucas, she says there, who do you think will play in the final Currie Cup match?
Well, I've been following bits and pieces, always one for the highlights, especially because of the time difference. Nick Mallett, former South African coach, came out and said some very interesting things. In fact, he's heavily critical about what's happening in the Currie Cup, saying it was quite boring. In fact, there's been a few games where it's been kind of error riddled, but I do like the look of the Bulls from Pretoria. And Western Province Super Rugby, the franchise, the Stormers, as they're known, the beautiful blue and white.
Western Province in the in Currie Cup, Stormers in Super Rugby.
Super Rugby, yeah. So I really like the look of those two teams. Been very consistent, and they like to attack edge to edge. So Bulls seem to me the front runners. They've got that typical Springbok style of rugby. So Bulls and Western Province.
There's a link down below on in both Facebook and YouTube to my predictions that are on nzsportsradio.com. I do predictions across all the top professional rugby competitions all year round. So you can always get those on nzsportradio.com. My thoughts are not that far from Boa's, I must admit. You've got to say, the Bulls facing the Lions in one of them. The Bulls beat the Lions by 7 points a couple of weeks ago. So, 2 weeks ago, I think it is now, yeah. So I don't see why that would change. Also, Western Province against the Sharks. Now, Western Province have only won one game against the top four opposition. The Sharks have been equally bad and have basically won at home and lost away. So you've got to say, the
Blue Bulls. From,
yeah. So Bulls and Storms for me as well.
Yeah, one thing I would say is if you look at the numbers, there's been a high level of unforced errors, lots of knock-ons and lots of skewed passes. So that is a bit of a concern. But I have to say, when these teams, especially the Bulls and the Province, when they've been on a roll and when they actually get those passes sticking, boy, they look really good. They look really worthy of a good highlight reel. So anyone out there, I would encourage you, watch the highlights. Don't tend to watch the game end to end because there are large parts of most of these games. It was a bit of a difficult watch purely because there was a large number of unforced errors. And I think based on what I'm seeing, Rassie Erasmus and the Springboks did the right thing by dodging the championship because the rugby I'm seeing in the country is not quite
up to. To be fair, a lot of the Springboks play overseas now. You're looking at some very young, inexperienced sides here in the Currie Cup coming through. I mean, it's more, look, we are talking Mitre 10 Cup rather than Super Rugby level here with this one, with players off in Japan and Europe. So, I do think you're right. It isn't up to that level anymore. And a lot of work needs to be put into the Currie Cup. Mallets, interesting. The Springbok coach who lost to Japan. Interesting to hear his thoughts. But anyway, there you go. Talking of Rassie Erasmus, you mentioned something about the Lions tour in his comments.
Plan Z. Z for Zorro. Well, there's that was very, very interesting. Rassie, well, basically what he was saying was that the Springboks and Saru are prepared to go to any length to make this happen. Now, there's been some rumors that they are willing to actually break tradition, break protocol, and go to the British Isles, i.e. England. But obviously, with the prevailing situation with COVID-19, all that is up in the air. So it's very intriguing when he said Plan Z. Usually, if you say Plan B, so he's made a reference to Plan Z. And I don't know, maybe they are seriously looking at bringing the tour down under, because obviously there'll be bumper crowds. And of course, there are ways of being creative on how you can get both teams warmed up, prepared, because you have a number of Super Rugby franchises locally available to players. Also, could be very interesting. I don't want to speculate or assume or read too much into what Rassie has said. He's a very smart man, very tactical sort of guy. So obviously, for him throwing a bone like that, it's really got the internet trolls and internet fans talking. I was flooded with messages over the last couple of days over this comment from my friends and fellow peers in the rugby world. So it'll be very interesting to see. I hope Plan Z stands for Plan NZ.
Well, we'll have to wait and see on that one. But yeah, by saying Plan Z is obviously Plan A is for the British National Lions to tour South Africa with 50,000 supporters. And we've said all along, that looks, to put politely, overly optimistic or delusional is another way of putting it. So by saying Plan Z is saying, look, we are looking at multiple options. There's obviously the British National Lions travelling in a bubble without fans. There's the option of South Africa going to the UK with fans or going to the UK without fans, or postponing a year to 2023, as you say, potentially playing the tour in Australia or New Zealand, because you could land in New Zealand, quarantine 14 days, then travel, play some games here, then travel to Australia, whether you don't have to quarantine and go and continue playing because you're coming from New Zealand. So a lot of different options there. But it's very clear that as far as South Africa is concerned, that playing the Rugby Championship last year was not essential. Playing the Lions is. I think that's basically his message here, that this tour has to happen somehow because of the financial impact of it.
Two key elements there, Paul. Obviously, the financial. I think they're starting to really feel the pinch. They need the revenue, absolutely, and there'll be a lot of pressure from the sponsors. And of course, planning to the next World Cup, getting your ducks in a row as far as your players, you know, very, very critical part of that cycle. That being said, you know, where South Africa were and how they won the 2019 World Cup, that really threw a conundrum that you don't essentially need to get that four-year cycle bang on to go on to win a Rugby World Cup, which is what they did. And there's absolute empirical proof to show that. But for Asi Erasmus, Director of Rugby South Africa, to come out and say that's obviously there's a lot of financial pressure, and obviously there's player wages and there's all sorts of things which they need to consider. So looks like South Africa are indeed being quite genuine in saying that they need, that they're prepared to do whatever it takes to make this tour happen.
So, I mean, one of the things that we've got to say about this is there's a big difference between a South Africa turning things around to a Rugby World Cup and some of the other countries. South Africa only have essentially four provinces. So you've got all your players, essentially, or a lot of your players in four teams, right? So a lot of them play together already. There's a lot of connectivity in that. You take that to France, for example, where you have 14 teams in the top 14, or to England, where you've got 12 in the Premiership. It's a different ballgame pulling players together from that many teams. And also the access that South Africa had outside of international windows, again, was very high. The amount that Razzie got the Super Rugby franchises to work with him, the French and the English head coaches won't be able to get. So it applies to some countries more than others, I think is the point there. And also, let's be honest, South Africa never lack quality players. They always have enough players.
Yeah, so that's a brilliant way to analyze the situation, Paul, because you're bang on the number of franchises, the quality of players. And of course, you know, their schoolboy system moving on to the Curry Cup and then on to the Super Rugby franchises. You know, they've got a very, very sound system. There's, you know, much like New Zealand here, there's no shortage of talent. There's always a churning out process of never-ending talent. So, very, very interesting case study. But from where they were to winning a World Cup after losing the first pool stage game, fantastic stuff.
Yep. You talked about potentially playing in Australia, and Andrew G. Irwin on Twitter says, thoughts on the proposed mini World Cup that Rugby Australia have come out with. So what Australia basically says, look, we're already hosting a team down here, and we are perfectly happy to host other teams if they would like to come and play us. You're all welcome, was, I think, essentially the sales pitch. Do you think there's anything more than that, or is it just purely pie in the sky, let's throw something out there and see if anything sticks?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of bait for the flounder, more or less, hoping that someone will get a bite, but looks like that's not going to happen, because realistically, Paul, you know, it's just too much of tinkering to do, and obviously with the teams involved, you know, they would have their specific plans. So all this means is that they will have to rejig their plans, or, you know, they might end up sending a depleted team. So we don't really want to see that. What we want to see is quality, competitive test matches. So throwing a sort of speculative spanner in the works, in reality, is not going to help. And of course, you know, with these four-year cycles, the amount of planning, especially the high-performance coaches go into, is quite mind-blowing. So all this is going to do is add a different dimension. And in a, if I can use the polite term, it's just going to be a nuisance. So yeah, in my view, it's just pie in the sky. It's just trying to bait people. And it's very, very, very unlikely that this is going to eventuate, unless, of course, something very spectacular happens. And it's desperate times for rugby union. But the way things are moving down under, especially in Australia and New Zealand, with the pandemic situation, is very positive. So I can't see it happening. And I'm not so sure that any of the major unions are actually going to agree to this.
So give you an idea as to some of the stuff that's going on then. Let's rephrase that. So that's planned to go on in July. Obviously, whether or not it happens, we'll have to wait and see. So England are planning on playing Scotland, the USA and Canada. Obviously, they'll be missing a large number of players, probably sort of 10 or so, you'd think. To the Lions, because the Lions are looking at taking 35, I think it is, players to South Africa. The assumption here is that the Lions tour does go ahead. And we've just seen that they're looking at option Z. So there is a chance of that. So with the situation in the States, will it improve under Biden? Who knows? Will England want to travel over there? We'll have to wait and see. Scotland, after playing England, are heading off down to Argentina. And I'll be honest, I'm not entirely sure, but I've not heard much out of Argentina recently, but I know that they were in a bad way COVID-wise previously. New Zealand is expecting to host Italy. So I think New Zealand will be open to taking Italy over to Australia, probably, and getting involved in a mini World Cup series and get some better opposition, in all honesty.
The term mini World Cup is quite a stretch, isn't it? It's like pulling a bungee cord.
Well, yeah. France are supposed to be playing Japan. And with obviously the situation in Japan isn't great at the moment, as we've seen delays to the top league up in Japan. So could Japan and France come down to Australia to join in that sort of Nations Cup or whatever you want to call it. Mini World Cup or whatever. So look, there's a possibility, I think, that Australia could. I mean, you look at one of the things that we've learned from the Australian Open, though, is whatever the guidelines are for the general public, the players will have to follow them as well. With Dr. Djokovic going, I must talk to my coach, mate. There's a thing called FaceTime or that you can do, or you can video call your coach. You don't have to have him walk around to your hotel room. What was the other one? Oh, he says, yeah, try and move people into private houses, players into private houses with tennis courts. Boy, oh boy, you really have not read the temperature of the room, have you, with comments like that?
That's your daily dose of self-entitlement, isn't it?
So, yes, any rugby teams going to Australia, you're going to have to abide by the local laws. That you're not going to get any special treatment, especially if you fly in on an airplane that's got COVID cases that keep getting found. So there we go.
Yeah, and Paul, look, at the end of the day, I mean, we have, we have health experts who are experts in epidemiology and virology. So once they set the guidelines, and they're simple enough to follow anyway, we have to follow them. It's that simple. And a direct result of following them is defeating and curbing, in New Zealand's case, complete elimination, i.e. community transmission of this COVID-19 virus. So really, if professional sportsmen coming out and saying, I need to check to my coach or give us a house with tennis court, I mean, yeah, he needs a bit of a reality check. It's very disappointing when that sort of thing happens, and especially with general public and Joe public sacrificing so much. It's probably real poor taste. So he's faced a bit of a backlash. And keep in mind, Djokovic had that incident where he hosted a tournament. I think it was about 8 months ago. And then it's messy, very very messy.
Two tournaments where they were playing basketball, very close to each other, and host a party as well. And funnily enough, most of the players who were on those tournaments that he did tournaments got COVID. Well done. Yes. He's got good form, hasn't he, in this one. One of the female players also is holding up a sign saying, give us air. It's like, look, yes, I understand your windows can't open. We found out in New Zealand what happens if we allow you to open the windows. You jump out of them and escape. That's why we lock the windows. you have air. Don't worry. You can breathe. You've got air conditioning. You're fine, girl. And one of the tennis players, his partner was complaining that she would have to spend 14 days without seeing a professional hairdresser. Wow, that one! I think that was very much not reading the room. Anyway,
Anyway, yeah.
Moving on then. Timothy Ellison, yeah, has joined the Crusaders as a defence coach after Mark Jones. Decided not to return from Wales to continue with his second year of his contract. And you can understand why, with these COVID times, why he wants to be nearer family. And quite rightly, the Crusaders and him agreed that would be end his contract and let him stay up in Europe. Absolutely, it makes a lot of sense. But they said they weren't going to rush into replacing him. They've gone and found someone relatively quickly in Tony Ellison. What are your thoughts on that appointment?
Yeah, look, I've been following this quite closely. In fact, because I remember it was Colin Mansbridge, I think the CEO, he was on radio talking about this. And he was talking about sharing portfolios, i.e. other coaches taking over certain parts of the defensive element of the Crusaders. And he said, look, at the moment, everyone's happy to share, so we're in no great rush. But Crusaders being the Crusaders, you know, when they see talented people, they seem to always get them on board. But I have to say, in Tamati's case, now I don't know what he's like a coach or what he's as a coach or what he's like a coach. I have to say I'm very, very surprised that he has been drafted in straight away with relatively little to no experience coaching. We all know, you know, he's had a very illustrious career playing pretty much in a number of teams. If you look at Super Rugby, I think last team he played for was the Melbourne Rebels. And then he went over to the Rams in Japan as well. So a lot of experience. So I think it's very interesting signing. But again, you know, Scott Robertson and the team would have seen something in him, or he would have brought something whilst in the interview, which are really intrigued, and they would have seen a good fit in Timothy Ellison. So I wish him all the best. It's going to be interesting to see how he develops as a coach. And I assume nothing. You know, the Crusaders may very well have unearthed a gem, but all that is yet to be seen.
Yeah, I have to wait and see. As they finished playing in 2018 at the Rioc Black Rams, and you kind of expect that he probably spent the last couple of years there doing some player coach kind of role, and then sort of he's had 2 years, so 2019, 2020. I'm not sure how much coaching he managed to do in 2020, but could be a disrupted year. But yeah, 2 years of coaching and then to be straight into a Super Rugby assistant coach role. Wow, yes, that is very quick. Promotion. They do talk about he has connections with the province and also connections through his iwi as well.
Whatever the methodology, Paul. I mean, it's a complete departure to how they've usually gotten their coach. Now, for example, Scott Robertson, Razor, I think he started his coaching career mid 2000s coaching an under-8s team in Sumner, and he progressed through the ranks, and then obviously took the New Zealand under-20, the Colts. They won a junior world title, and then you know he progressed through and. Despite all that success, he still ended up not getting the All Blacks job. So, you know, you compare that to Tamati. So, look, I think great opportunity for the young man. I can only hope that, you know, he does some wonderful things. And you know, defense is a very intriguing sort of thing because, you know, I personally have a lot to do in defense, obviously, my safe tackle framework. And I observe most of these high-performance teams very, very closely, purely for the fact that in the modern day, the tackle area, the tackle technique in defense seems to be going higher and higher and higher, even though the guidelines are clearly saying you need to be tackling lower. So it's going to be very interesting to see how Tamati approaches this. And also with some of my work I'll be doing with Safe Tackle Framework, where we're actually trialing it here in New Zealand in a couple of adult competitions, which I will talk about as time unravels. I'd be really interested to have a chat with him and see what their defensive philosophy is, because the Crusaders, boy, they have some really solid defensive work. And let's hope that he can take it to the next level.
So he was a player coach with Japanese top league with the Kurita Water Gush, which I believe is a second tier Japanese top league team, not in the top tier there. And then also was part of the Wellington Lions coaching group last year for the Mitre 10 Cup. So I'd say, yeah, quick promotion. Congratulations to him. And yeah, good luck at the Crusaders.
Big step up. Yeah, it's kind of like robbing a liquor store and then straight away going to the Federal Reserve. So good luck to him.
So I'll turn around, a couple of questions in here. What are our thoughts on the five-second law about the ball in the ruck being applied? What do you think about that, about referees?
Look, guys, referees. This thing has been around for a long time. Use it. 15 seconds later, the ball's still in the ruck. I've only seen two referees, one in Super Rugby and one in the Gala Premiership, say, look, use it, and they didn't use it, and they lost. So this whole five-second thing, you know, it's, you know, how long is a piece of string? I mean, 5 seconds in everyone's time is 5 seconds. So unless there's a virtual clock in front of some of these referees, because most of them are blind anyway. Yep, I said it. You know, it's to me, it's just all red herring. I think we just need to simplify the game. The simple law has to be, once the ball is available, the referee says use it. When he or she says use it, the ball's got to go out. If it isn't, blow the whistle and give a scrum. It's pretty simple. There's all 5 second, 15 second. To me, it's just nonsensical.
If you're going to stick with the 5 second law, then look, we have this guy on TV watching who doesn't really do much, right? He can sit there with it. He can go, right, yep, the ball's available. Click stopwatch, stopwatch, and just go beep down the line. And the players know that the referee's going to get beeped. And as soon as he gets beeped, he's going to blow. And he's not going to warn you. You've just got to use it. And stop all this coaching on the pitch. Let's use the TMO. Let's give him something to do during that time. And that could speed up the game very quickly, I think, to me, is how I would go about doing it.
Paul, look, to me, this is, again, complicating, just adding more layers. You know, the simple answer to this, especially in a driving maul and also ball being available in a ruck and probably even in a scrum, in a set piece, is once the ball's available, the ref will say, use it. The ball comes out. If it doesn't come out, you lose it. It's pretty simple.
Props being sin-bin from both sides for too many resets. Get some props on who are willing to play. For me, that's what I say. So yes, absolutely fine. When a referee tells props, look, guys, either you scrum properly or get some people on who will, I'm more than happy to hear that. And invariably, the scrums stay up a little bit more after that, once they get both told they're both going to go off. No problem.
Yeah, look, I have some very strong opinions on this. For me, simplify the scrum. You just go 1, 2, 3, go. That's it. All this, you know, every 3 years we start changing things. And the reality is it's actually made that particular area of the game, which is a scrum, even more complicated. It's a lottery. Some people have no clue why a penalty is being given. And sometimes these referees, they don't even know. And there's just too many differing points of view. So again, simplify. Just go 1, 2, 3, scrum. And then that's it. Get the ball out, use it or lose it. Simple stuff. ABC.
Moving on then to some Super Rugby questions and three national news. Now, I'm not sure if this is the real three national news or it's a different or if it's a joke page. But they said, should Super Rugby have mid-season transfers? What are your thoughts on that?
Very interesting concept. My opinion on it, Super Rugby Aotearoa, is no, there shouldn't be, purely because it's going to be really odd once we start this whole mid-seasonal transfers. And I think it's just only going to end up diluting the competition because, you know, you have a certain group of players, they get used to a certain pattern, a certain culture. And I think based on the evidence I saw last year, as the season gets going, once we come towards the latter part of the season, that's when we actually see the best of our rugby, because all the numbers, especially the ball staying live in play and also the amount of players who've been used, the individual numbers, they correlate on what we call a R=+1 curve. So it's a progressive curve. So based on the evidence I'm seeing, and I know it's only one season, I would say no to mid-season transfers as far as Super Rugby Aotearoa goes?
Mid-season transfers work in football for two reasons. One, the season's a lot longer, right? The Super Rugby is only 8 weeks long, 9 weeks with the final. So there's really not enough time to be switching your side up. Secondly, the money is transferring as well as the players, which basically it's a way that some football clubs keep themselves alive. They produce players and they sell them. That's their business model. Here in New Zealand, Super Rugby sides, well, A, none of the sides have got money to buy players off each other. And B, the players are produced by Mighty Ten Cup and by the provinces. So there is no need for that. So it wouldn't work in Super Rugby. Now, I listened to a podcast where the new CEO of Scarlets was interviewed, which was interesting. And he was suggesting that perhaps that could be a model in rugby in Europe, where teams that produce talent can then sell it on. And he made a suggestion that which I found a bit interesting, was that he reckoned that Scarlets overproduced talent, which, considering that they've not won any titles in sort of, 8 years now or 9 years, I'm not quite sure it's this idea that they're overproducing talent. They're not really being competitive. They were competitive up until about 3 years ago, two, 3 years ago. Some interesting comments from him there. I could see how it could work in Europe, where teams have got a bit more money and where teams actually develop their own players. In the Southern Hemisphere, that's not true. In South Africa, they do. But in Australia and and particularly in New Zealand, the Super Rugby franchises definitely do not produce the talent. They just take the talent from the provinces that produce it for them.
I thought it was a very interesting piece from. I actually had a laugh about that old Scarlett's article over producing. Well, one thing, speaking of this whole transferring talent and importing, I have to say, you know, the Melbourne Storm in the NRL and now the Wallabies under Dave Rennie, they've really figured out St. Kent's in Auckland. That's right, St. Kent's. they seem to be a good exporter of talent. And very soon, I think, if Dave Rennie continues over the next 4 years, we might actually see more New Zealanders, more Australians who played their school rugby in New Zealand, playing for the Wallabies. So, yeah, there you go.
Well, that's only because St. Kent's go around hoovering up players from other schools around the country.
So, yes, I couldn't resist. Okay, thank you for saying that, sorry.
Yeah. So, yes. St. Kent's with some interesting business practices for a school that's about developing people and rounded people rather than professional rugby players.
Love it or hate it, you know, they've got a good track record, and all power to them, because the better they do, the better the Wallabies will do. And the Melbourne Storm,
St. Kent's have got a very good track record of winning rugby games. How good a track record they have of actually educating boys to be rounded people and to actually be contributing to society is a different question entirely. But as far as producing rugby players, absolutely they have a good record. But that's not what they're supposed to be doing. That's not their reason for existence. Anyway.
Yeah.
Aaron says that Jordy Barrett had the option in his contract to move to the Blues midway through his Hurricanes contract. Is that a mid-season transfer? No, that's not a mid. That would be at the end of a season, mid-contract transfer, not mid-season cap transfer.
That's the pre-season window where, you know, all the player agents get involved and ended up, you know, throw pretty much a lifeline for players who want to transfer. So yeah, you're spot on there, Paul.
Nocturnal Rights, St. Kent's, just money for schoolboy rugby, not my thing. Totally agree with you there, Nocturnal Rights. Absolutely on yours.
I knew we'd get some discussion and reaction as soon as I throw the St. Kent's thing out there. So, because I saw some photos of Vunivalu training with the Wallabies out with the Queensland Reds, beg your pardon. And boy, he was looking very impressive. And man, he was a superstar when he was with the... that's right, St. Kent. So go to the Wallabies.
Yeah, so I mentioned the problem with the regions in Wales is that all the players go over the bridge to England. Yeah, I mean, Wales have been doing a better job of retaining their talent by, again, they've brought in a similar rule to Australia, where Essentially, you have to play in Wales unless A, you've got over 60 caps, or B, you've not played for Wales before. So if you signed and played in England, and then once you got your first Welsh cap, you've got to come back to Wales to play for Wales. So interesting one there. How Wales have been going on about it. Simon Hughes said it on Facebook. My question is, where should Super Rugby expansion in the future? So currently we have obviously five teams in New Zealand: the Blues, the Chiefs, the Hurricanes, the Crusaders, and the Highlanders. There are five teams, and that's in Super Rugby Aotearoa. In Super Rugby AU, you've got the Brumbies, the Waratahs, the Reds, the Rebels, and the Force in Super Rugby AU. And they will then be playing Super Rugby Trans-Tasman, or TT, quick time trial at the end there for it. All the four ex-Super Rugby teams in South Africa have gone off. Look like they're joining the what will become the Pro 16. And the Scarlet CEO did actually use the word Pro 16 in his interview. So clearly that's going to be the brand for that. The Jaguares have moved into the South American rugby competition with Chile, Brazil, etc. And the previous Argentinian team there has been basically disbanded. The Sunwolves currently have been disbanded. So yes, currently we have just these five teams in New Zealand and Australia. Where do you think it should expand to next? Where do you think it will expand to next? And where do you think it should expand to? But let's just start with where do you think it will expand?
Well, look, for me, all three are actually the same. And the reason, I'll tell the reasoning first, because financially, logistically, and also what's currently happening and what the country's vision for rugby is, and this is, I'm talking about Japan, I think this is where the future expansion should be. I was reading an article about how the Japanese, JRU, Japanese Rugby Union, want to make the Japanese competition the best in the world, attract the best talent. Kind of like, you know, what the English Premier League did to itself in the mid to late 90s when it went fully professional, that a horde of these mercenary overseas players come in. There's some amazing talented coaches, and it went full on professional in business model. Now to do this, you have to have people who are very good administrators, who have the financial nous, and also the what is the term I'm going to use here? Financial literacy, as in the professional currency, how you deal in professional sport as a business, so that there is sustainability, not that just be a one-hit wonder like a bottle of soda just pop, and you know, because there's a lot of emotional stuff around, especially with, you know, the Pacific Islands. Now keep in mind, you know, I'm someone who's involved in a club where 99.7% are Pacific Island players, but the reality is, when it comes to a financial literacy and a financial management point of view, this is an area where the administration has come short. So in my view, purely looking at it from a professional point of view, I think Japan needs to be the best. And in fact, in Japan, there's probably room for two franchises. And this is where you will see most of this Pacific Island talent being absorbed. Because as it is, the top league competition in Japan have a host of Polynesian stars on their books anyway. So it's just a matter of, you know, divvying it up and creating two strong squads. For me, Japan, easy top pick.
Look, I think Japan could, in time, and I'm not saying this could be done next year. I think they could host a conference in a similar way. You can have Japan Super Rugby JP, Super Rugby NZ, Super Rugby AU, and they could have five teams up there. It's just a matter of growing it in a sustainable way and putting the building blocks in place first. If we take a step back and look at the Jaguares and the Sunwolves, they both joined Super Rugby at the same time. What do we have with the Jaguares? We had a team that was planned for 2 years before it actually happened, signed all its players ahead of time, got themselves organized, and then kept the same structure and the same players over their lifespan within Super Rugby. And they went from being basically lower table up to making the final in their final year. The Sunwolves were put together, probably were thought up about 6 months ahead of actually playing, as they put a bid in, signed players at the last minute, changed their squad every single year, giving only one-year contracts, and basically started at the bottom of the heap and ended at the bottom of the heap, and showed that they had zero administration, even though they had Nouse around it, even though they had some very good coaches in there. Eddie Jones was involved. We had Pat Lamb involved. Tony Brown involved. These guys are good coaches. They know how to coach rugby players and put together winning teams. But they couldn't do that because they were given a brand new set of players every single year, and given mixed priorities between the Japan job and the Sunwolves job. So, look, Japan historically have shown have not shown any ability to actually run rugby. They've generally had an amateur administration that is an old boys network and doesn't actually make things happen. So, it's at the moment it's all talk and around being this best league in the world, but they don't work well with the companies that run the teams in the top league, and they're trying to put in a different structure of things. You're like, okay, well, where's the money coming from that? Are you going to work with these top league teams or you're not? And whilst, yes, I do think Japan is the right place to reach out to, unfortunately, their administration is just way too naive at the moment to properly build anything.
What needs to happen is, you know, they have to look at medium to long term and actually, you know, financially they will qualify because they have the resources. They have more resources than most of the top tier nations put together. So they need to have a professional setup where they commit to, so that when they actually are given a license and it is, you know, continually monitored. And this is where I think Super Rugby needs to evolve with. Sansa really need to have a look at some of their systems and processes and tighten up on their business aspect of it with each and every individual franchise. They really need to put into place checks and balances so that they show and they meet certain benchmarks and standards purely from an administration point of view. I think once that is sorted out, and if they have enough resident players in a Japanese franchise or two franchises, you know, especially getting some of these big Polynesian names and stars, boy, it's only a matter of time before these guys be super competitive. I don't know whether, you know, in a short space of time, they will be able to beat or consistently challenge some of the top teams like the Crusaders, etc. But I think, as you rightly pointed out, if they can overcome the shortcomings of administration and get the right structure of understanding professional sport, Japan, all the way.
Yeah. Now, I would also obviously like to see one or more franchises in the Pacific Islands, in Fiji and potentially Samoa as well, maybe even Tonga. But I think I'm not sure whether Samoa and Tonga would have to share because of the size of their markets or whatever. But starting off with one team across the three would be a good idea, a good way forwards. And then again, look, growing it sustainably over time. So you get say, right, yes, in this World Cup cycle, we will have the Pacific Warriors. In the next World Cup cycle, we will set up the second team, and the Pacific Warriors will be Samoa and Tonga, and we'll set up a new Fiji team, and the Fijian team players will move over. That kind of thing would be how I would look at going about it. But that requires some long-term plans and long-term goals. And let's be honest, we've never seen Sanzar give out any kind of long-term plan or long-term goals more than 2 years. It's pretty much as far ahead as they can think. They'll put together a four-year TV deal, but if any changes to structure, they don't really think more than 2 years ahead.
Yeah, and also, you know, each and every individual union, you know, they are there for the benefit of themselves. Let's be honest about it. I mean, NZR will look after number one, which is NZR. So, I mean, any support extended to the Pacific Islands, I would be, you know, really interested to see how much of a true long arm extension it is. And it just doesn't end up being a recruiting base for the existing franchises and obviously escalating it to test level. But yeah, again, I mean, there's a lot of question marks, Paul.
That takes us directly into so those are how Boa and I would like to see Super Rugby expand. And essentially what you're hearing is keep it in our time zone do it in a sustainable manner with long-term goals of how you expand extra teams. Okay, that's essentially what we're both saying. Okay, so the reality is of what will happen rather than what we would like to happen is that we have these two, five Kiwi teams, five Australian teams, and we're going to have two teams essentially join. One of them looks like it is going to be Fijian-based, as long as it can get itself off the ground. And the other one is going to be a Pacific side in South Auckland, which, as Bella says, wow, what a great way to recruit players for the All Blacks. sounds cynical, but that is what it looks like on the surface of it. Even if you say that, they've all got to be Pacific qualified. Well, sure. And then when they get the option to play for either Fiji, where they pay for their own flights and get given $1,000 a game, or they get paid, or they get a $80,000 to $100,000 contract from New Zealand Rugby, which one are they going to choose? Quite rightly, I personally, being an Englishman, would take the New Zealand contract rather than playing for England and having to pay for it myself. Folks, it makes absolute sense. How will it expand? If it expands in the short term, it will expand with that Fiji team and the Moana Pacifica. That's the only way I can see. Now, that Moana Pacifica team might play some games in West Sydney and South Auckland. At the end of the day, what will be very telling about that team is their first 10 internationals, where do they play? Do they play for the Wallabies, the All Blacks, or do they play in the Pacific Islands?
Yeah, I think the future of highest level rugby, test rugby, particularly in the Northern Hemisphere now. And I'm just going to go back to a point I think Simon was talking about, Wales and the provinces. Look, Scotland are now going down this road. They are on a big time recruitment of South African born players. So you'll see a lot of South Africans playing in the Scottish team for the next, 4 or 5, maybe even longer. And I think Wales, sooner or later, will go down the same route because, they're under huge pressure. I mean, Wayne Pivac has had a pretty horrific run of results. And look, the easiest and best way, especially at high performance, it worked for Japan, is to import players from overseas nations who are, there or thereabouts, who don't quite cut the mustard, bring them in, give them a long-term contract, train them together, and then just watch the magic happen. So I think
that's what happened in the old days with Japan. And I think probably under Eddie Jones that changed a bit. Sure, they had Pacific players, but quite a lot of those would come over as schoolboys and get schoolboy scholarships, a bit like they do to New Zealand. I think pretty much all of the Japan players had learnt Japanese and become Japanese citizens and as proper Japanese speaking, not your kind of I think they did properly integrate with the team with the society, as well as the team.
This is a different form. This is a new evolution of the quick fix. The bang, you're in, and hey, here we go. Here's a passport. You're a Scotsman, so away you go. Look, it's a very subjective thing. There's nothing wrong for those who advocate it, but me, I'm very old fashioned. I don't believe in that at all. And that's a quick fix, and quick fixes long term, they're not sustainable.
Yep. Now, folks, Boa, thank you very much. We got through most of the questions. The one that we didn't get through was Nocturnal Rights one, which was naming the first or predicting the first 15s of each of the Super Rugby franchises. I knew we would not have time for that. But that is something that we will do over the next sort of 3 to 4 weeks. I think we've got that long before Super Rugby actually kicks off. So we'll probably do one team a week for the next 5 weeks from the New Zealand teams at the very least. Maybe have a look at some of the Australian teams as well and to predict those. So look at that over the next several weeks, folks. Don't forget, 8 p.m. Tuesday evening, the Driving Mall show comes to you. Boa, thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thank you, fans, for all the questions. It's a lot of fun.
Yep. And folks, Don't forget to join me at 7 a.m. every single morning for the morning sports briefing, your best way to start the day up to speed with all of the important sports news. And also, hopefully on Thursday evening at 8 p.m., we're trying to organise our very first A-League / Wellington Phoenix show. So look out for that. Hopefully, as I say, Thursday at 8 p.m.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.